In this episode, we talk to Adam Johnson about his new book, Boost Your Django DX. Welcome to Test and Code. If you've found value in this podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go over to pythontest.com and look either in the top menu bar or in the bottom footer? And there's a few links we're going to talk about. Contact is how you can get a hold of me. Newsletter is how I can get a hold of you. And support is how you can find links to things like my book, the PyTest book, PyTest courses, the community where you can ask questions. And that's about it, really. I'd really appreciate if, especially if you could sign up for the newsletter. I'm trying to collect emails of people that might be interested in similar topics. Welcome, Adam Johnson. It's been a couple of years since we've talked. What have you been up to since then?
I've been doing some client work, surviving a pandemic, and at the end of last year, I wrote another book, Boost Your Django DX.
Client work. So you, when you say client work, so what does that mean?
I kind of work as a consultant on Django projects and jump around between a few, handling things like improving testing, developer experience as this kind of broad umbrella term. Things that can help and doing things that I might have a bit more leverage over, like upgrading Django, upgrading Python.
Oh, that's interesting. So on a lot of the projects, are you, it's probably a mix, but do you develop new sites with Django for people, or is it mostly coming in and helping with existing Django
sites? It's mostly people with existing projects, perhaps a few years old, who either want a short audit. So I'll do like even a few days or a week, just looking through for the most obvious issues that can crop up in projects that have lasted that long. Or I often work on a part-time basis with them over a longer period.
Oh, that actually sounds fun.
Yeah, definitely. I like having a bit more of a feel for what people struggle with the framework. I think it helps inform me building more third-party packages or helping maintain Django core. If I was working on a single project, I'm sure I could get that kind of like... tolerance, right? Something works a certain way and everyone is like tolerant of it working that way and just don't touch that thing again.
Yeah.
Whereas when you see the same, like two or three different teams struggle with the way static assets work or something, that informs me to like go make open source contributions.
Nice. Okay. I could go down this rabbit hole a lot, but I want to switch gears. So just to remind people, if they weren't back here listening in 2020, you were on episode 128, and we talked about PyTest randomly and how tests should be order independent. Very important. Now I'm telling people to always use, there's a couple different plugins to randomize stuff, and randomly is definitely one of the better ones. But there's whatever works for you, I guess. And then episode 135, we talked about your first book, Speeding Up Django Tests, I forget what it was called.
Speed up your Django tests.
Yeah. Okay. we talked about the contents of that and the book, but and now your second book is Boost Your Django DX. DX is developer experience, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Everyone knows that term. Yeah.
Okay. It should have been obvious to me. I didn't. I kind of put it together because of UX is user experience, so I figured D is developer, but. I love the idea of focusing on developer experience. So what does developer experience mean to you?
Yeah, it's definitely a very broad term that could mean a lot of things, from like how comfortable is your chair? Is your screen at the right height? Or are your colleagues pleasant to work with? But I think for most people, it's like the experience of writing or debugging code, and like, is it easy to make changes? Is it easy to avoid common pitfalls and bugs? And is it fast and pleasant to get your changes from the first time you like type a key to production?
And there's a lot here. I mean, not just in your book. There's a lot that you're covering, but there's a lot to developer experience that I don't think
One of the things I like about focusing on this is because I don't think a lot of management chains think about this too much. Mm-hmm. They just hire coders and just have them code. And maybe, hopefully that's not the case. But there's a, I think this makes a big difference. What do you think? I mean, it's hard to put a number on it, but do you have like a gauge for like if people don't focus on it at all versus spending some time focusing on improving tools and stuff?
It's one of those things that's very hard to put a number on. You're right that most management chains probably don't think of it, especially the further away you are from the coal face of coding. I think it's something of a responsibility for us as technical people to be thinking about our own kind of work environment. We have the most control over it. To put a number on it, I don't know. I mean, there's that myth of the 10x developer, and perhaps the 10x developer isn't 10 times smarter, but makes 10 times fewer mistakes because they have all the tools and stuff in place.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry.
No, I was thinking what number would I put on it? And I don't know if I would put 10x, but that's not out of the realm. I think watching people that are comfortable with their tools work quickly. Like I'm not even around Django, but I was remembering the first time I noticed that my tool game was weak was in grad school. And I was using, nothing against Emacs people, but I was using Emacs at the time. And, I was, had a office, one of my office mates, I had an office because I was a teaching assistant. But I shared it with two people, but one of them, she was a avid Vim user and with Vim with tags, and it wasn't like Windows Vim either. She was command line Vim all the way and, or VI at the time with tags and being able to jump around through the code. And she was like thinking through the code flow without having to care what files she was in. And that was the first time I saw that sort of magic. And I'm like, oh my God, she really is working probably 20 times faster than I do, because I just take a look, try to find the file in the header file, guess where it is, look there, it's not there, look somewhere else, where she was just going, popping right to the tag. So, I don't know if you, that's just one section, and that's one that we actually hopefully don't have to teach developers to go out and pay attention to, because I think they know that they should understand their editor. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not even like, it's not even VI versus anything else. All of the good, it should be a coding editor, and all the good coding editors can have tricks like this. But let's, I guess, what sort of things do you cover in the book, or what do you think is important?
Areas? Yeah, well, editors are not what I cover in the book. Definitely a key area, but there's just too many of them. There's individual guides for every single editor out there that you should definitely pick up and find all the relevant Python and whatever plugins that make your workflow faster. The kind of things I cover are the more universal that probably everyone or most developers could make use of. So that's things like documentation tools, make it faster to get to the right docs. Code quality tools, which is like an umbrella term for linters and formatters and other kinds of checkers, including building your own. That kind of stuff is more general Python. And then like the other half of the book is more Django specific, like the best way to write your Django settings files and common pitfalls that you might encounter there. Best way to populate your database in development so you can always have a good working set of data that makes it very fast to get started. Yeah.
And that's one of the things I did notice was the almost half the book seemed like everybody should read this, whether you're using Django or not. If you're using Python, these are good things. Like really understand how virtual environments and your dependencies will go together. This seems obvious to me, but it isn't obvious to a lot of people. I mean, I remember a team where I did have to start convincing people that virtual environments were a good thing, when you first start out, I mean, maybe not everybody, but some people's introduction to Python is similar to their introduction to Perl. Whereas, you know, I think Perl has some of the similar problems, but most of my Perl writing was not applications or big things with lots of dependencies. It was just straight Perl stuff. It was like a search and replace script and things like that. So you just stick it somewhere. And I don't have to bundle it with dependencies or anything like that. Of course, later when I started doing advanced things with Perl, we would get into packages as well. But the Python, I now everywhere, even a little build script, I tell everybody we've got to use virtual environments. It's just, it's not optional anymore, I don't think.
Yeah.
So, but that's just scratching the surface. We get into one of the second topics you get into that I was surprised by is IPython. Does IPython really, like, do you use that much with Django development?
Oh, yeah. Django has a shell command that, you know, you end up using quite frequently. It sets up Django, then opens a Python shell. And if IPython is installed, it will use IPython in preference to the normal Python shell. I found it invaluable over the years. In fact, I was lucky enough to be shown it on like one of my first few weeks using Django. So I never really used the Python shell. And then when I started finding I needed to use it on other projects because IPython wasn't there, I was like, hey, this is so much harder. I don't have like a real history. It's not easy to paste multiple lines of code. The autocomplete is worse. These things add up.
Yeah. And I had kind of knew the IPython shell was around, but sort of ignored it for a long time. But I was reading a data science book, which I can't remember the name of right now. But one of the, during part of the introduction is a description and a brief fast forward introduction to IPython. And I'm like, why am I not using this all the time? This is great. There's a lot of cool features. Cool. I'm going jumping ahead a bit. One of the things when developing a web application, Django or anything else, is understanding a development server. So I was glad that you covered that. Is Django different than somebody else that you use development server differently?
I don't know if it's like that different. It does the same kind of, it's HTTP, but it has some like extra features that are pretty useful actually, that maybe you would miss because most people would just run the development server and never read the docs. So I hope to expose those. The key one there is Watchman. So I guess most development servers work with a fairly inefficient file watching system where it's universal, but it takes a lot of CPU. It'll run in a loop and check every single file, has it been changed? And Django does this every second by default. So once your project has grown, especially by installing a few packages, which could be a few thousand files, it can take a notable amount of CPU, and then it can take a notable amount of time to actually discover it's time to reload, because it's just busy all the time checking files. So Watchman is something that lets you hook into the kernel and listen for file watch notifications from the kernel. And that's different on every operating system. So we need a separate tool to do it for us. Otherwise, we'd have to maintain like six different versions of it, the different OSs.
Okay. So that's something you install extra. So that does that drastically reduce the CPU load then?
Yeah, on even a medium-sized project with like 100 dependencies, I found it would take 25% of a CPU core. To run. And that adds up when you're using a laptop on battery power as well, because that means the CPU can never scale down like to its like low frequency and reduce the power consumption. So you can take your 8-hour battery to 4 hours or something like that. You install Watchman, it becomes 0% because nothing happens until a file actually changes.
That's cool. Huh. Well, now I'm thinking that trying to think about incorporating Watchman in a better way to watch for tests to rerun. I'll have to look at that. That's got more uses than just Django then, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, wow.
There's alternatives to Watchmen as well. Like Django used to use one that would hook mostly into Linux. There's also something called Watchdog and a fork. I think it's called Watchgod. But for whatever reason, Django picked Watchman, which is maintained by Facebook.
Watchgod. That's funny. Nice. I kind of love the dumb jokes in programming. It's good.
Yeah.
Having a lot of a little bit of focus on linters as well. I'm actually surprised. I'm curious about this because I'm surprised frequently entering and talking to different teams. How many development teams don't use any sort of linting as a standard rule? I mean, there might be individual developers that use it, but a lot of people, like a lot of groups, don't have a standardized way. Is that something common? If you work as a consultant coming into groups, is that something you often have to teach people about?
Yeah, it varies, and like teams might have tried setting up linters, and they're like opt in. So you know, if a developer wants to run them locally, but that's not maintained on CI, or something like that. Twice, actually, in the past couple of months, I've been looking at a new project. I've run Flake8 with the Flake8 Bugbear plugin, which is a fantastic one for picking up on extra common issues that tend to be like real sources of bugs. And I found the same bug. And once you've found like a real bug that could affect production, then it's normally taken as a strong argument, like, oh, we should have had this all along.
So how do you recommend people use things? So let's just take that, like Flake8 and Flake8 Bugbear. Should it be run locally, or should it be run on the CI server, or both?
Yes, both, and in your editor as well, if you can get that going. I like to use pre-commit. You've had Anthony on the podcast many times. Pre-commit made by Anthony Sotil, and that's a good tool for setting up all these hooks, running them when you run git commit, or before if you run it on the command line or through an editor, and then also in CI. It even has a CI service.
And I was actually slow to come around to enjoying Black, and I think I'm a convert now. Black is great, and I can't remember who said it, but it isn't most people have the, I think a lot of people have this experience with Black, in that they may not agree with all the decisions, but they agree that it's not productive to argue about this stuff anymore.
Yes.
My particular one was whether or not the default should be single quotes or double quotes. And I had lots of arguments on my favor. I thought why single quotes should be better, but it's not really a hill I'm worth dying on. It's worth dying on, so I'll let it go. It's not just there's these universal things that I've been focusing on because I'm not a Django developer, and we did talk about some of the Django server and some of the fun Django things like Django and IPython, but you do cover a lot of Django specifics in here, I think. Let's pick one, like the, I don't know, settings. You have a chapter on settings. Is settings that big of a deal that I have to like focus on that, or what's going on there?
Surprisingly, you'd think like the Django settings file is typically just a module with constants that you might pull from an environment variable. So it's just some uppercase things like what is the settings for the database that you want to connect to. But there's actually a lot of small things that I guess there's like a lot of tutorials that people copy them from or something. Like there's the tiny anti-patterns that add up to settings files becoming a bit of a mess or really problematic once you go down the road. I hope to provide a template that like gives a lot of good guidance all in one place in a much more declarative format than the docs can give you.
Nice. Okay. I was glad that you you wrote this. I was like thrilled to find out that actually like most of the stuff that I'm learning from this book applies to all Python projects, not just Django. However, it's pretty cool you wrote it. And I do notice PyTest shows up a couple times in here, which is cool. I'm curious, and I think that's completely, it's nice, and it's completely valid to cover both, because I think a lot of people are still, a lot of use, the built-in testing for Django is unit test-based, right? Yep. But a lot of people are using PyTest Django. I think is that the plugin that most people are using, or is there some other way to run PyTest and Django together?
I've seen simple projects just do it, roll their own. Like you just need a PyTest fixture to configure Django's settings and run the database migrations. But yeah, most projects would need PyTest Django. I would guess that 3/4 of projects, at least those that are being maintained over a year or with someone working full-time on them, are using PyTest at this point. Yeah.
Really? 3/4?
That would be my guess.
Oh, wow.
I think, yeah, there's a tipping point. Once you've written so many tests with Django's test runner, you're like, well, I'm getting bored of the output being so minimal or hard to debug, or missing these features from PyTest that are just over there. So,
yeah. And how about your personal stuff? Do you prefer to be working with PyTest with Django apps or?
I prefer PyTest. Yeah, all my open source projects use PyTest. Interestingly, one pull request I'm working on right now with someone else from the Django world is an extension to the Django test runner. But I've picked PyTest as the test runner, so the PyTest test runner is invoking Django's test runner to check that it does the right stuff.
That's awesome. it's all test runners all the way down.
Yeah,
inception. Well, cool. And this was pretty quick. I mean, I guess from the outside world it looked quick. How long were you working on this book?
Yeah, I think it took me about 3 or 4 months from first commit till published. 4 months.
I'm going to go cry now.
I wasn't doing much else at that time.
Okay.
I took a break from work due to family reasons last year. So it was all I did. And it's really the culmination of everything I've been working on, trying to blog about since I started being a consultant in 2019.
Okay. Interesting. Now, I'm glad you put that little caveat that you were doing this most of the time, because that makes me feel a little better, because I spent like bloody 18 months on my book, or more, but I wasn't counting, but I just know from the dates that that's about how long it was. And my first guess that I told the publisher was, when I proposed a second edition, I said, I think it'll take somewhere around 6 months, give or take 6 months. So I was off by a year. Anyway.
Well, you can only ever be late, right? Like, it's very hard to be early.
Well, right. I mean, unless it was already done, I wouldn't have been early. Now, you self-published this, is that correct?
Yeah, on Gumroad, okay. Yeah.
Any final topics you want to cover about before we sign off?
I was thinking before the podcast about how linters, type checkers, formatters, they all fit against testing. Because, you know, we often hear that like testing is the thing to do to make sure your code is high quality. But there are definitely things that you cannot test for, and you need all of the different bits of the puzzle, I think. They all cover different gaps.
Yeah, so linters and what all did you cover? Linters and what else?
Formatters, type checkers.
Yeah. And then I would add, probably add monitoring afterwards.
Definitely, yeah.
So you're not done when you've pushed. You've got to monitor as well. So one of the things that I like to have in place is to find out what URL somebody was trying to use when they hit a 404, so that mm-hmm. I can, because sometimes it's surprising. I'm like, I really thought that was there. What's going on? And there happens to be like a misspelling or something like that. That's worth putting a redirect in, but little things, but that's not really it. Anyway, this is kind of a neat thing that you put together. Cause you can, now when you're a consultant, you can say, could you just read this before I show up? And, or is it something that after you
it
come in,
it would normally be after you show up. Yeah.
after you show up. Okay. Well, yeah, because you don't want them to read it and then not need you, right? So,
well, I think there's like a division. There's the people who have the time, so they'll go read a book, and there's the people who they don't have the time, so they hire me, and then I'm like, well, I'll make this change, and here's the citation myself.
Nice, yeah.
Of course, that links on to everything else, but. It's convenient. Yeah. I don't have to repeat myself, hopefully.
Well, always a pleasure to talk with you, Adam. I wish you luck with this book and with your contracting work and everything else. And we'll keep in touch.
Thank you very much, Brian. It's been great to be back on.
Thank you for listening to Test & Code. Let's keep in touch. Head over to pythontest.com/contact to reach out to me, or /newsletter so that I can reach you, or /support if you'd like to, get a course or something. That's all for now. Now go out and test something.